this meeting. Pine City Planning Commission, Wednesday, November 17, 2010, at 4:05. We will establish a quorum, beginning with my immediate left.
Commissioner Blackson, present.
Commissioner John Thomas, present.
Commissioner Gloria Klein, present.
Commissioner Linda Maggard, present.
We have a quorum. Yay. We will now have a pledge of allegiance. Virginia, would you like to lead us in that?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Agenda item four, add agenda items. This is where we would add any matters to the agenda, which would be on agenda item number nine. I would ask now that if anyone has any matters, please make them public.
Yes, we need to discuss the counselor position.
Okay, other matters would be position on planning commission.
Right.
Right? Okay. Counselor position on planning commission.
And I'm also not clear on our December 8th meeting.
December 8th.
Oh, it's going to be the conflict with them.
Yeah, we got that. There's a council meeting that you're changing.
Yeah,
December 8th, yeah.
Yeah, we have a meeting on that.
Okay, but we'll discuss it.
We may not need it.
We may not?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Virginia?
Nothing.
Linda? Okay. Number five, public comments for items not on the agenda. Public?
Hey, Mr. Public.
Public comments for items not on the agenda.
Public comments for items not on the agenda.
You're on the spot.
Well, you're not public. John knows why I came down here. I just wanted to talk about the
conditional use
for properties that I have some experience, and I had somebody that's told me about the problems they have in Deschutes County.
Okay.
With a conditional use permit, where the conditional use permit is, I'm going to just use this in this fashion, is issued for one company or one use, and time goes by and they sell the business, and then somebody else takes that business over and turns it into a different business that's not along the lines of the, or it changes into a business not along the lines of the original conditional use permit.
Okay.
You know, we may have time during it. I mean, this is a 2-hour meeting that we could possibly slip that in, you know?
Yeah, and in fact, we have some insertions into the code to talk about conditional use criteria because you asked us to do that, and that would be a great place to have that.
Okay, so we got that.
Is that okay? Well, unless you have a time element and we can take care of it.
I can't stay past 6 o'clock.
Well, because that way he doesn't have to stay for the hearing.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's do it.
Thank you.
Okay, so conditional use question.
Specific language on that.
That's right. Okay, conditional use question. Okay.
That's fine.
Item number six is the approval of Planning Commission meeting minutes. Now, keep in mind that this will include 3 meetings, October 13th, October 20th, and the October 20th open house meeting minutes. Those 3 meetings, would there be any on the question on the minutes?
There's one misspelled word. I was looking for my minutes.
Okay.
Sure, this is spelled wrong.
October 20th, it's on page 3, and it's treated.
Yeah.
Okay, so spelling treated.
That was it.
And then, Patty, you got that noted, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there was one other thing that I thought might go better. I wasn't even up there, but page 3 on the open house, where it says talking about Ms. McMahon stated that friends like consolidating the ordinances, blah, blah, blah.
But what paragraph is that?
Okay, it's paragraph 3 on page 3.
Right. Oh, okay. So,
and it says, she advised do not create. That would be like an actual quote. So either we need to add quotations or she advised not to create or add, not to create. That would be a way to get around it. Not to create. She advised not to create instead of making it like a quote. So that's the only thing I have to.
Linda, did you have any?
I did not.
Okay. I would entertain a motion to approve October 13th, October 20th regular meeting, and October 20th open house meeting minutes, all three, with the two corrections that we have so noted.
I so move. I second.
Moved and seconded on the question. Any questions or comments? There would be none. So it is so moved. We have approved those minutes, meeting minutes. But the corrections.
Chair Thomas, can I ask a question?
Certainly.
On item 7, I request that we change that agenda title to public hearing on the zoning ordinances. This is our night to do that, so I want
at 6
to
o'clock?
Yes. Am I missing something on the agenda?
Well, this is regular meeting from 4 to 6, and then at 6 starts.
Yeah, it's on a different agenda.
Oh, we're not starting right now. Okay, sorry.
No.
Okay, so there's
fact,
a separate agenda item.
I'd like to ask the staff, too, if we may try to end this regular meeting a half hour or so prior to the hearing, which would be like 5:30-ish, just to have a break, because during this period there's no room for dinner and such. So, if we can, I mean, I don't need dinner, but I'm speaking for someone who might.
Good call.
Okay. 15 minutes or whatever. Yeah, just whatever you do. Anyway, something's wrong. Okay. So we will continue our discussion on zoning ordinances now.
Okay, good. I was confused for a second. Well, and tonight when we go through the public hearing, I'm going to guide you through a preliminary statement. It's not going to be like last night where I had to read 4 pages of stuff.
Oh, that's good.
I didn't have any oxygen after that. But tonight we'll just run through it very quickly because
when you read through that, there's a lot of changes that would be, instead of saying applicant and everything, see? So I was wondering about that.
This will work.
But instead of applicant and such, there's other line, you'd say like applicant. I mean, there's no like applicant, so you'd say something else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would summarize this for you.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I was.
But I think you're right on here. I think if you summarize as you go, you'll be fine.
Right.
What are we talking about?
The statement that you have to read before.
Oh, okay. I just was like.
In here it talks about other hearings where there's an applicant. This case is not really that way.
Okay. So last time we were directed to make some additions, and we've done so. Would you like to start with procedures or zoning or sign code?
Procedures.
Land division.
Either land division or procedures. Get the hard one out of it.
Okay. James, you had some new stuff you had added into procedures.
Go into zoning.
New additions to procedures?
Are we going to have
new? No, the procedures.
Okay.
Oh, we don't have any, right?
We're working on our current.
Yeah, I'm going to have that new stuff.
Okay.
That's the new, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, so if we're not, if we didn't make any changes, because I know you sent me some new stuff.
Yeah, I did, but I apologize here, but the only changes that you directed in the procedures ordinance. I'm trying to find it here. I didn't highlight it.
Well, at the last meeting, there was only five or six of them.
The only changes in the procedures code, and I don't find it in here, had to do, if you remember, we had a discussion on the city limiting itself in terms of timeline to issue a decision or a staff report. Remember that
one? Right.
Mm-hmm. So we extended that timeline out to 30 days, or we just or took it all out. Because what we were saying is on certain applications, give yourself 10 days or like a minor partitions, things like that. Mm-hmm. So just change the language to not really limit the city to do so.
Yeah, that could be extenuating circumstances, so.
Exactly, and so that was it.
And just many things in land division?
Land division, not really.
It wasn't all that much? Okay.
Because most of the stuff came in through the revision of development.
Okay, so let's start with zoning, so then we can talk about conditional use criteria too. Now, I have new copies for everyone, and copies for the public as well. What will happen is, from this point forward, any changes I make are going to be in track changes so that you can see as we go what's happening. Because hopefully they're minor and just continuity stuff.
So are we going to address what I had asked about?
Yes, housing. Go ahead.
Okay, so this one's no good anymore.
That's correct. You'll want to toss your old one. Unless you have notes that you want to refer to. And if that's the case, we'll do this one up to today's date.
Recycle.
Now, I want to go through and see, because I did make some notes.
Can I get a copy for the file?
Of course.
But I want to make sure I know which one.
Yeah.
It does. This one does look small or little, short and small or anything.
No, she double-sided it for me. That's why.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
She tried to be easier. Tried to simplify, and it was only from photocopying.
It's all right. It's much thinner. It's half again as thin.
I think they still charge us the same. Well, it drives me nuts.
Same ink, but less paper. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And did you sign in?
No, I didn't.
There's a sign-in sheet there.
Okay.
If you could sign in with your name and contact information, then we can.
Sarah, I was looking for the change that you were just talking about in the procedures code. I can't find it because all I did was actually omit the requirement.
Okay.
So there is nothing different to look at, other than it's not there.
Okay.
Good deal.
Okay, because we had some time constraints, we had to get ready for that hearing last night, so things aren't as pretty as they could be. But if you look at the second page, which is the index, you'll see that we have added in site plan review, conditional uses, variances, and similar uses at the top under Article 6.
Yeah.
We will get all the pagination and everything to sync up. So don't worry about numbers. That's not important. What we want to do is go to that section, and let me get you there on the page.
Page 29.
So you'll just have, it'll eventually have page number, which all the other ones already do. They just
we just don't match up for.
We just didn't have time to make it pretty.
What's page?
29.
That's all right.
It's plus, it's one page off.
Okay,
so.
I
don't have a problem if this is the final version. No.
What was that? You're smart, Alec.
I'm smart.
Oh. Fine, I'll talk slow. Okay. So,
29.
When we, through the zoning ordinance, we've identified uses for different areas of the community. And then, as the city of La Pointe takes jurisdiction, we'll have some sort of review process on how new uses are constructed. So, site plan review gives you kind of a checklist. In this case, it's written out. But it's the basis for the checklist that will be used for your applications. So there's a purpose statement, and that's pretty easy to digest there. There are broad purposes that match things that you've seen in the comprehensive plan. So we have the flow from the comprehensive plan policies to this. And when you look under C on the bottom of page 30, you'll see site plan approval required. It tells you when a land use permit is required. And for such things as you're making changes to the land, you're changing a use, those are kinds of things that require site plan approval. And they're listed here for you. They, for simple things such as excavation, all the way through to building a new building. We recommend that the code include a requirement for a pre-application conference. It doesn't have to be mandatory, but it's a good thing to encourage for a new city. Make sure people come in, they understand what they're going to do before they get their financing, before they buy the lot.
Yeah.
Make it easy and make these codes accessible. And so you'll see that in there.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
On existing properties like the parklands, would we need to do that? Would we need to go through a site approval if there were changes made?
If it requires, if it's listed as a use and they're making changes to expand it, to intensify the use, to change something that would affect the neighborhood, yes.
So if they added a playground or a basketball court or anything like that, they would have to.
Yeah, and this
within
is
reason.
Where there's different levels. If you remember, when you go back through the land use procedures ordinance, there's different levels of review. So if they were basically modifying a use on the property with the existing mm-hmm. facilities that are there, the type mm-hmm. of review might be minuscule to say, are there any additional impacts from this that would require more parking, for example, mm-hmm. that we want to mitigate the impacts. But if they were building a new building, see, then the level of review gets more intense. So that's how it is for every land use permit.
Mm-hmm.
The less you do, the less you, right. you have to submit and has to be reviewed.
And that may not be very often as far as frequency.
No. I'm just thinking our other hat we're wearing, because that question came up.
Mm-hmm.
What will we need permits and, you know.
Yep.
So.
Under item 2, to make things convenient, you can consolidate your land use requests. Mm-hmm. So if you needed a site plan, a conditional use, and a variance, do it all at one time. Save time and money.
That's good.
And James, jump in at any time.
Okay.
Application, pretty simple. You identify the parties who can make the application. And then here's the real nuts and bolts, and this is the part that will be the checklist primarily. We ask for drawings. We ask them to be to scale, so we, you know, it's not just done on a cocktail napkin. You've got to have something that tells you the distances, and otherwise you won't be able to tell if the setbacks are met. Doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be to scale.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Just when I was looking at the setbacks, for example, where would, for example, a mobile home park fall? Commercial?
It could be a conditional use in the commercial zone. It could be outright in the residential zone.
Because I'm looking at the setbacks, and when I was driving here, I was like looking at a lot of the existing parks, and I'm thinking, a lot of them are very, very close to their lot line.
Okay.
They're not 20 feet. And even if it's a side yard that you figure it's a side yard, they're not 10 feet from their side yard.
Some have become non-conforming uses after the adoption
so
of the code.
So, for example, we adopt the code, mm-hmm. it goes into effect, they have someone move their mobile home out, and they cannot have a new one move in if it does not meet the code.
In a mobile home park,
they ask for a variance. I mean, I'm just asking.
Yeah, I know. If it's a single lot with a mobile home on it,
mm-hmm.
and they move it out, and then a new one comes in.
About parks.
In a park, it may be different. There may be exceptions that are appropriate because you're going to have a pad and facilities there, and the park as a whole has been approved with a certain layout. And so I'm not sure
moving
what,
it,
would
well, what it is
required
is,
at that point.
No,
I'm just asking.
Moving it to develop a new park, you have to go through site plan review.
Okay, so but
maybe expanding,
this would be probably
or if you expand it or park or what. But to move an individual manufactured or mobile home onto a space in a previously approved park.
Mm-hmm.
That actually is administered by the building code,
okay.
building mm-hmm. regulations,
okay.
nothing that we're looking at today
okay.
because they have
to
meet
to
certain
sure.
structural requirements. you know, to be a safe structure essentially is what they're looking for, that meets certain structural requirements. So you're not putting something in the park.
It would only be if they wanted to expand the park. Then it would go under in that section that they were expanding.
Right. Or if they modified it. Or if they sold it. Take 10 spaces and make it 20.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And if it's on an individual lot, that's where the rubber meets the road. We're going to say, hey, you moved it off. If it's after that time period, a year, whatever we decided.
If it's not allowed.
Okay, yeah. Then you've got
the next question I have is in regards to RV parks.
Do you want to ask those now? Okay. Or
I don't know.
Maybe
I
get through the site plan stuff?
That's fine.
Let's get through site plan and then we can come back to specific uses.
Okay,
so here are all the things that a person... our customers would have to submit drawings, and sometimes for more complicated projects, we're going to say you need a traffic study, you're going to need a noise study, those kinds of things. And we want to give flexibility to the city to do that, because if we can't answer the questions of whether it's appropriate use in the city, then we haven't done our job. So we have to have flexibility to say sometimes we're going to ask for things that are not listed directly here.
And it may seem like there's a lot of things that are asked for on here, but you need... all of it's really not that difficult to put a drawing together that shows all of these things, and you need all of those things because if you remember, you want to make sure that you're not overburdening any city system. So you need to see where the utilities come in, the water line comes in, the connection to the sewer, how big the parking lot is, so we know how much traffic is going to be generated. Show us the location of your exterior lighting so that we know it complies with the lighting code. You know, so the site plan is it seems like a lot, but it's all pretty basic stuff, you know, that you're putting on there. It's not real difficult.
Mm-hmm. We will ask in some cases, most cases, for a written summary, what we call the burden of proof. And it helps the city see that the applicant is cognizant of what they have to do and that they've said, here's my requirement, here's how I met the requirement, you can see the site plan on X, and that's how that particular element is met. So I'm skipping to page 33, and now going to 34, because we're still talking about elements of the plan. And sometimes it may seem onerous, but there are times when you're going to say, look, we don't have a clear indication of where these property boundaries are. So you're going to need a boundary survey. Now in the pine, that could raise a few eyebrows. What? I need a survey just to do this? But if we can't tell with any certainty where the property line is, then we don't know where we're setting that setback. So I'm going to make you aware of that. We're not going to be onerous, but sometimes you have to ask for that data.
And on the back end, what it does is it... I got a phone call 2 weeks ago from an attorney in Bend who was representing... person that owns property right at the corner of Huntington and Burgess, the southeast corner. Y'all know where I mean. I don't know who owns that property. But it was part of a boundary line dispute where there had been a garage approved on adjoining property, and then they came back and did a survey, and it crosses the property line. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing by requiring things like that is, one, you're protecting that. You may seem onerous to the property owner, but you're protecting that property owner in the future from these kinds of issues, which can get, you know, is it more expensive to do a survey or tear down a garage that you just built? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So...
there was a situation
for all of that stuff.
In Sun River that we used to laugh about, where somebody wasn't watching and they built a building on the wrong lot. And there was a significant, it sounds funny, and we all laughed, but it was a big to-do.
There was a big issue on the lot that Ken has with a fence. Yeah, and it was, the fence was built where it shouldn't have been, and they had to move it, and it was terrible.
They can get real sticky.
Mm-hmm.
On page 35, the evaluation criteria is subjective, it's not completely objective, and it requires that there's some analysis to determine whether, and you'll see under 2, the evaluation criteria, whether things reflect and harmonize with the characteristics of the adjacent sites and things like that. Now, what does that mean? Well, that's why it's discretionary. If you're putting a house in a subdivision, it's going to blend. And if you're putting a 7-Eleven in a subdivision, you may need further analysis to develop buffers and things like that.
And that's what, that section 2, so when you read like a land use decision or staff report, that is what is addressed in writing by the planner. The planner is taking each one of those criteria, looking at the site plan that has all those elements that, were required to be on there. And we, as you can see just at the top of that page, we want the applicant, in addition to the drawing, to submit, as Deborah said, the narrative that addresses these and essentially tell us how and why you meet these based on what you're proposing on the drawing. And the planner will go through there, you know, and make a finding as to whether the information submitted in the drawing and in writing meets each one of these criteria. You know,
And you'll hear that word finding all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It means the evaluation by the governing body of whether the applicants met the criteria. And we always call that a findings and decision. You've seen that before mm-hmm. with the county stuff. There's also a heavy emphasis on landscape issues. In Lapine, it's critical that we maintain landscape, that we have areas for natural vegetation instead of having to plant new vegetation, and for snow storage, etc. So you'll see language on 36 and 37 that talk about that. We also want to make sure that we're consistent with our previous discussions that people put in the things that are required to be put in. And on 37, you'll see that there's a performance assurance. And so for landscaping, if there's something that has to be done, it's either installed prior to occupancy or a bond is put in place of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll talk about
the project on December 15th.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly why it's put in there.
But this is when mm-hmm. we want your staff to be real sticklers on. People should be on the ball and get that stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the criteria was preceding couple pages is, you know, I think there's different ways to do it. It can be very checklist and very rigid. But what we heard from the public, and I think from you as planning commissioners, is, and if you remember, a lot of this review is directed to the planning commission, is you want the ability to be flexible. So, and you can have different degrees of flexibility in how you interpret or how you get the discretionary criteria.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times the applicant, it depends what your project is. A lot of times they like the rigidity because they know exactly what the measuring stick is that they have to
right.
meet.
You know, another thing that does is it alleviates seeing a tree every 6 foot center when you drive through the pine. You know, I mean, we don't want that type of standardization in the pine, so I mean, this gives us some flexibility.
It does. So, you know, the requirement may be you need you have the ability to look at a variety of landscape plans and mm-hmm. say that is what we want instead of, and it meets the intent of this section.
Well, yeah. The main thing too is being, because of the weather situation, being flexible around that has to be a big part of it, and that's unique to here, so.
We've also asked in section 2 on page 37 for landscaping, mandatory landscaping areas for different types of developments. So where you have more density, you typically have more open space that's landscaped. And we start with duplexes, we run through commercial uses.
And
I saw that too.
And I specifically struggled with, so that would be a discussion point. There's no CBD per se.
We called it the traditional commercial zone, or just the commercial zone. So what I'm going to do when I go back through this is I'm going to link up and make sure that we have all the words. What James is talking about under B3 is...
We don't have that zone.
We have a variety of things.
Mm-hmm. I put that in there so that I didn't leave a blank, because what it really was, what I'm trying to refer to is in a downtown situation, oftentimes you don't have a landscaping requirement. Mm-hmm. And that's what, that if you're commercial, like a typical, you know, you have a landscaping requirement, but not in a, downtown is a lot of concrete.
Yeah, it's
and you're
a
using
long thing.
The entirety of the property,
up.
So.
Even if it just said not in a core business district.
Commercial core, yeah.
Not in A, because the denotes that there is one somewhere.
And that's a highlighted in yellow, so that would be a discussion
sure,
point.
Sure,
like
sure. You know, because we have two core areas right now. Right?
And we're going to have a mix of zones as well.
May end up with more.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it could be any.
Good discussion on 38 about parking lots instead of just a sea of asphalt. We're asking for sensitive treatment. It's not unusual. And so it's good to have landscaping and buffering and screening around those kinds of uses.
And they end up serving as, over the long haul, people say, why do I have to do that? Well, you're going to end up having to put in drainage facilities anyway to meet DEQ requirements, and they can be combined in your landscaped areas a lot of times. So it serves a dual purpose.
And as your standards and specifications are developed for more public improvements, things like drainage swales, catch basins, natural drainage areas, or man-made drainage areas are going to be a big issue too. But not for this section. Because the rest of this really talks about where buffering and screening and insulation standards, it's all pretty traditional stuff. I'd like to go to conditional uses on page 40.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember when we went through the charts, the cookie charts in the code, mm-hmm. we had permitted uses that were the dominant feature of the zone, and then we had conditional uses that required a little more thought because they're not the primary use. They may have features like automobile sales or an industrial use that is very intensive. They need a little more review, so that's why we call them conditional uses. They're not permitted outright in the zone. They're certainly allowed in the zone. They just need more scrutiny. And the way to scrutinize those is to create criteria that allow you to regulate those uses.
Let me jump in real quick. When you look under Section 1, authorization to grant or deny, this gets at Ken's question real quick. I'm going to read it. It's basically, uses designated in this chapter, meaning the whole zoning code, as conditional uses, as Deborah was saying, may be permitted, enlarged, or otherwise altered when authorized in accordance with this section that we're going to read here. But it says, in the case of a use listed as conditional, existing prior to the effective date of this chapter,
that should be on top of that
part. A change in use, enlargement, or alteration of such use shall conform with the provisions of a conditional use, if so classified. And what that can be expanded to say, if you get a new owner of the property, that permit runs with the land. They are obligated to run that business according to the land use permit that was originally issued for that use. If they change the nature and theoretically impacts coming from that use, it doesn't mean they can't do it. They may be okay to do it. They have to go back through the permitting process.
Right. Yeah, I understand. It runs with the land. So this is a land use. It's not a people use, right? I mean, we can't control different people coming in. We can control the land use.
Correct. You know, you can have 20 different owners over a period of 20 years.
But they have to conform to that original conditional use.
Correct.
Okay, that was, you go through that approval process, and then so the new owner has to use that property in that same manner.
Correct.
Right.
Now, there's
like
always
license.
But there's always, you know, there's the rational person, though, concludes that over 20 years, businesses change, businesses grow, you hope to grow your business, maybe you take on more employees, you need additional space. Well, nothing says you can't do that. It just says if you're going to be doing something that changes the original impact from that property,
mm-hmm.
Again, we need to reevaluate that. And it doesn't mean that the evaluation process is going to be this huge process. It could be very simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's, again, the whole intent is making sure that, you know, when you read these criteria, that these criteria are still being met as that use evolves on that property.
Mm-hmm.
Water systems, sewer systems, transportation systems are not being compromised. The adjoining property, you know, if you added an element to your business that puts out smoke and, something offensive, and you didn't have approval, well, we want to see, can it be mitigated? Mm-hmm. We put conditions to control it so you don't have a derogatory effect on the city. Those types of things.
Can I say,
exactly. I think I'd just like to see a cravat in there of some functional piece that would require that new owner to go through some small check-in with the planning commission that I'm going to buy this business, and I understand my conditional use, because the truth of the matter is just like James said, that over 20 years, it slowly moves, and it's almost unnoticeable at times, versus where it would be automatically obvious that somebody goes from doing something to opening a chick, slowly moving into a pornography shop or something like that. But is there not a way, instead of just some citizen seeing out there that, gosh, you know, they're not doing what they used to be doing, and then making a complaint, that instead of just going with the land, it also goes with the land, but also that on a change of ownership, they have to come to the planning commission and sign a document. There's nothing onerous, but just...
There's two things related to that. One is, whenever you purchase a piece of property now, on the deed or in the documents, there's a reference that go see your local jurisdictional planning division, because, you know, that does not give the authority to use the land in any way that's not allowable by the local zoning or land development provisions. That's in your deed. I forget the actual language. So it's kind of like a disclaimer.
Subject to.
It's a warning. On the back end, to require what you want, is you could put it in here. The difficulty is that a lot of times, you, as a jurisdiction, it becomes hard to enforce because you don't know when the property is changing hands.
But it's still there. I mean, granted, the person doesn't come in, but he has an obligation to, because he knows he should. I mean, or there is an obligation for him to come in, because down the road, when something happens, then you have a case of you have that amount of control over the fact you fail to come in and get a use permit, a conditional use change, or you're not using it as you should. So that's my only concern, and I have some expertise witness that could speak to this in Deschutes County, who had numerous, many situations where this is, and it's been nothing but a headache. And
I think if somebody does something that they're not allowed to do, you're still faced with the enforcement on the back end. What you're talking about, it's not that everyone would know when they buy the piece of property that they had to do that, or you would know the property changed hands. But the reality is, if you add something in there like that, is that if one person did see it, and they came in and it kept them from doing something illegal, it's one less headache that the city has to deal with on the back end of the enforcement.
Right.
So
that's my point.
It also affects other things too. I mean, the chamber, you know, they keep a list of businesses and owners and all that kind of stuff too. So maybe it could be tied in with something like that too.
Do you have business licenses here?
No, not right now. We don't.
Took Ben 100 years to get a city business license.
Yeah. Now, last year we wrote down a business tax. Virginia, did you have something?
I do. I have a question on that, because there's conditional use and then there's zoned usage, right?
Well, there's permitted uses and conditional uses.
Right, permitted. So if they go from using a conditional use and it changes hands and someone else goes in there and has a different business, but it's permitted in that area, they wouldn't have to go through anything like that, right?
Well, what they're saying is that when there's a change of ownership, the person should be required to come down and reestablish contact with that original permit, so they know exactly what is allowed and what's not allowed.
Okay. Well, so in Deschutes County, you know, the code enforcement officer drives around and he looks for uses that are not allowed, and such. So it's a burden of the county. Now, you know, so the question is, by law, can we, you know, and still make it good for the public and the citizens of Lapine, can we do something to control this business use? I mean, I actually have a problem with the city trying to control businesses. I'm an old business owner, but the land use is a different story. Can we do something in between what other places do by having a code enforcement officer driving around looking for non-conforming uses? and not have everybody have to check in with the city to make every move? I mean, is there something in between that?
You know, there is. It's education. And it's making sure that people are aware that they need to be cognizant of the local land use rules, that there are places to get the information, that they should be aware of the things that are controlled on the property and what's important to the city. Tracking, and I know where Ken's coming from, tracking the sale is really hard to do because sometimes they're not recorded, they don't go through escrow, really tough to do. So what we can do is make sure we work with service providers like title companies and the chamber and have our own website and public service announcements to say, here's where you get information. If you're new to town, if you're changing something in your business, check with your city hall to make sure that you're in compliance. Don't wait until it costs you money. You have to look at the motivating factors that business owners rely upon.
And that's what business licenses get you, is it's routed through the departments to see, is this new business in this property going to, is it allowed, is it in compliance with previous permits, is it obligated, it's a...
Would you be comfortable with us putting in a recommendation for a policy that business license would help?
No.
Okay.
Never get my support for business license.
Yeah.
Okay. That's never. Just one way to help get data out. But if it's not, if it's not comfortable, we don't have to do that. We can do the other things. But it's going to be hit or miss because you'll never have
the
staff.
Well, the other question too is not just sale, not just ownership changes, but tenant changes. I mean,
right.
It's going to be...
They could be renting it.
Right.
Well, you don't want to have two businesses right next to each other either.
Part of it too is, and I appreciate totally what you said. You don't want somebody to come out there being like, you know, the Big Brother land use police coming down on, mm-hmm. on regulating businesses. Really, the intent is just to regulate the impacts to public facilities that are coming from that business. Mm-hmm. Water, sewer, streets, the enjoyment of people that live on either or work on either, have business on either side, that you're not doing something. That's the whole intent.
Well,
see, I'm trying to be sensitive to the citizens of Lapine. We go from no code to you've got to check in when you change a business.
Not that you
I'll
have to
what,
check in, but here's
the
information
is going
to
go a long way.
But when the city becomes in control of the sewer and the water, and they would have ways of monitoring, for example, water usage, that would be a red light if all of a sudden there was a drastic change, don't you think? I mean, that we could work with the different departments to...
I guess my advice would be do education first,
right,
and then use technology second, which would be any time a conditional use or a land use permit is authorized by the city. We use a GIS program so that anybody can look in and see what's connected to that property. Make information available. I think that's the best way to go.
I would throw a third thing is a code enforcement policy manual. It may be something very short and sweet, but what it does is it spells out so that, hey, you're doing something that you're not allowed to do, here's your ticket. It's not that. It becomes, how do we help you comply with the code? That you, 9 out of 10 times, people don't know they're in violation when they're in violation. So it becomes a policy. It says, here's how we're going to process or deal with violations. You give people the opportunity to come in and apply for the permit. You don't, you know, hey, you're doing something you're not allowed, and here's why. Did you know that? Here's how you can correct it, and we're going to give you enough time to go in there and fix it or modify your use.
Yeah, I see no way around a code enforcement because you're just not going to control someone from just tilting up a wall and expanding a building out here and changing a land use. You're just not going to do that. They're going to do it on a long weekend. They're going to go, him and Brother Joe, I mean, they're going to tilt up a wall and they're going to expand the building. And next Monday when our code enforcement officer, I mean, there's just no way you're going to control these people. And the only thing I can see is we're going to have to do a good job of code enforcement and such.
See, what the thing is there, it might be that if somebody does exactly what you're talking about, there's two different issues there. One, does it meet the building code? Is it a safe structure?
Right.
And your obligation as a city or a county is to falls on somebody and kills them.
Exactly.
The second part is, did they create an expansion to their business, to their restaurant that now seats 100 more people and 100 more trips and water usage and sewer.
The whole site plan and everything.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's...
But it doesn't mean that the process to come in and get approval for that has to be onerous, and that's, it can be, there's minor site plans, major site plans, what's the degree of impact, and it's going to be regulated, or the degree of impact will be compatible with the degree of review.
That's a tough one, Ken.
It is, but why don't we...
Glad you brought that up.
Think about adding
that for the next 3 months.
But let's add a statement that it's each property owner's and business owner's responsibility to check in and make, not to check in, but to make sure that their use is in compliance with the land use ordinance. And the only problem is then you get, that it covers everything then.
But that's what I was going to say. It doesn't go in the specifically the conditional use permit section.
No,
we're going back to, you know, the original purpose and authority and, you know, the scope and here's what it's intended to do, and you put it in there. And it's applicable to everything that requires a permit.
Yeah. Well, that will help.
It sounds like it would.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you're going to have to change the whole thing here.
No, we just, that's a simple provision.
I mean, I want to make sure that's okay with
no, I think that's a good idea.
Regardless. So you're talking about back in the...
Well, and under due diligence, it's their responsibility to,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Whenever you buy a property, you do right. Due diligence.
Okay.
Yeah, I think John really hit it on the head when he talked about, you know, over the long weekend, you know,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's sort of there, and then 6 months go by and nobody notices, and
yeah,
pretty soon they're operating out of that little section, they're operating something else, and trust, believe me, I can be a little untrusting of people when it comes to not quite paying attention to the code or hoping they get by with something, and
mm-hmm.
That'll be the first motivation, you know.
So we're going to have, you know, we have had this discussion before where we developed the codes, and from one day to the next, now we have Lapine City land use procedures, zoning codes, building codes, and a lot, and we don't have a CDD. I've already had discussion with City Manager Rick Allen about this, and we are going to make every attempt that the timing is such that we have, you know, if nothing else, a contract code enforcement for this, because we don't want to go too long without enforcing our codes.
Right.
What you're setting is a precedent that, just like a lot of other places in this country where you have a lot of laws and they're not enforced.
Yeah.
And that law becomes very vague in people's minds when there's no enforcement. Yeah. You can tell these, it starts in high school when the kids are hanging out down here at the library. You can tell them, you know what, you can't loiter here. And you go back into the library and they go, what'd she just say? I mean, because there's no enforcement. Now, you know, you go out there and you have this little security guy and he's got this radio strapped on the side, you know, and all that, and he got the cuffs.
Looks good.
And he grabs that boy by the arm and he takes him out on the sidewalk. That's enforcement. And that works. And so we're going to have to do so. And we've already had this discussion, so...
And you've asked us to create in the cover letter to the council that there's going to be a need for this, that they need to have a policy.
That's your
budgeted.
My other comment.
That's
my
your first.
My other thought about that is you were bringing this forth and code enforcement and everything.
Yeah.
All I could see was dollar signs and implementing an employee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying it's wrong. I don't mean anything by it like that. I'm just saying that
you know, as you work through this, you're creating expenses for a city, with a variable tax base.
Right. We have to do the priorities.
And it's the city's priorities. We will make recommendation. The city will tell us where we can put our recommendation. I'm just kidding. Did I say that? I'm sorry. I apologize. No, it's entirely up to the city council, and all we are is a body that makes recommendations, and we'll do so, and then you guys.
I think the comment was well made. What you recommended there is it satisfies my thoughts along those lines, and it's just a, you know, it's such a minuscule thing that I thought about and had long discussions with somebody about, and I thought, well, I should say it now rather than.
Yeah, it would increase awareness.
Mm-hmm. Right. I even like that book, little thing that James was talking about, you know, some little title companies or is available to them, and they can come into the office, or they can be asking questions, and you'd say, here's a nice little 6-page.
Yeah.
You know.
So, and that works really well.
I appreciate you taking this up, and it sounds like you quickly went to the
solution.
Thank you.
The easy statement to put in there.
You bet.
Okay, well, back to conditional uses. You can grant a conditional use, but you have to, again, make findings on whether it's appropriate. So you've got general criteria and general conditions, and it's the kinds of things that we've talked about. Let's see. I'm on page 40. You want to make sure that the use is in compliance with the zone. That the manner of the use on page 41 doesn't impact neighboring properties to a negative degree. Things like that. And it gives you the authority in a subjective way to limit height. Should something come in, ask for something that's too tall. Or limit the how it's operated. So you'll see A through H there gives you all kinds of control should you need it for those conditional uses. There are times you want to bond a conditional use permit, and sometimes it's the performance you're mostly worried about. Mm-hmm. And I want to give you a good example, but it's escaping me at the moment. But if you were giving a conditional use permit to somebody who was supposed to do this, and it was one of those things you weren't so sure about, you could ask for a bond to see that they follow through and do what they were required to
do. It might be, you know...
It's right on the tip of my tongue.
Well, especially, you know, landscaping, painting, parking stripes, you know...
those are the things.
You know, these are the things that what's going to happen is... Mm-hmm. This business is going to lose 3 or 4 months worth of business if we don't get that business in there right away. We absolutely need to work with these people, get that business owner in there, beginning to make money, and when spring comes, he paints the lines and puts the trees in. So these are things, you know, we have to be flexible like that.
We had it specific to landscaping, but we needed to put it in here because there's other things. A fence. You may require a fence between a parking lot and adjoining residential property because you don't want the lights from going in and out of someone's window all night now from the new restaurant that opened.
You may not even be able to put a parking lot in.
Yeah, but you can't put it in until... Exactly.
Yeah.
Or like the asphalt plants are closed right now, so you can't... But you keep someone from opening their business because...
Right.
If the ground's frozen.
We all have four-wheel drive. We can go in the dirt.
Yeah. So those are the...
Okay, ready to move on to variances?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, variances and similar uses. You know, I hate double-sided, but we did do double-sided. It'll work. Variance is exactly what it means and what it says. You're varying the code for a unique situation. And it's typically something that's unusual, something a person didn't create, and there are circumstances. And so we've listed those for you. You can see that under section 2.
And that is what people would have to prove, is that they meet those three criteria for variance. But you didn't create the problem yourself, and now you want exemption, essentially variance from what the regulation is. It's not general throughout the area, it's unique to your property. I'm going kind of going in reverse order, CB. And A, that the specific provisions of the ordinance, the setbacks, create some practical difficulty. We did a lot, in the county, a lot of that was, you know, there was only a certain part of the property where you could put a septic tank, so to meet the setbacks for your house, you couldn't do it.
Right.
You know, so it was a practical difficulty.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Or preserving a tree, and it only allows you to do 9 parking spaces instead of the required 10.
The other part of the code requires you to keep that tree, but then you can't site the parking lot on the property, so you need to vary.
So what's more important?
Exactly.
Minor variances, just like it says.
Less than 10%. I want to point out two things that are related. Section 1, 1B, no variance shall be granted that would allow the use of a property for a purpose not authorized within the zone, meaning if you have a residential zone and it doesn't allow a restaurant, it's not listed as a use permitted outright or conditional, you can't say, well, hey, I want a variance to allow a restaurant in the residential zone. I mean, you don't do that because all of this work we've done is forethought as to what should be in that zone, and you've given specific forethought that restaurants shouldn't be in that zone. So you go to commercial zone where they're allowed. Apply for zone change. Right. There's other. Now, the difference is sometimes you have something, a new business arises, and you want to operate that business, but it's not allowed in that zone, but the impacts, the characteristics of that are so similar to something that is listed as being allowed in that zone. That's what Section 4 is. It says, come in, make your case, tell us why your business, which is not allowed in the zone, is impact-wise, use-wise, characteristic-wise, is so similar to something that is allowed that we should allow you in that zone. In the same manner as that use is allowed, either permitted or conditional. And then you just go through the permitting processes. So that's really a section that really adds to the flexibility for as things change over time.
It's really helpful to have, particularly as technologies change. You don't want to have to be creating a whole bunch of new code if you can use the similar use section to keep things moving along. Are we doing okay? I'd like to move you to page 25.
Yep.
I know. Just want to see if you're paying attention. On page 25, I made a mistake when I cut and pasted from the Deschutes County Code. So please ignore any of the Wickiup Junction planning area stuff that starts on page 23. It just slipped over when I was cutting in the neighborhood planning area. And so please ignore that. I'll explain that tonight. But that'll be one of our changes. So the county's regulations for the neighborhood planning area, it's been difficult, it's been contentious, and we've had comments both ways. But we have people living out there. We have streets that wrap around this area. And so tonight what I'd like to do is go through those criteria to see if there's anything in there that you feel real strong about changing. And then we should talk about the implications of those changes. In the comprehensive plan process, we talked about this extensively, and we talked about some of the commitments that property owners have already made out there. So let's go through this so that everybody's familiar with that.
So you're just now talking about the neighborhood planning area.
Correct. Okay. On page 25. You'll see that the purpose statement is specific to the creation of this area, which is, it's also a receiving area for transfer development credits from areas outside the city that have poor soils that can't accommodate septic systems.
And so that's still applicable with the county?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's
we,
critical.
Thought we'd change that 10 or 12 years ago.
No. And you'll see that there are different discussion points, water and wastewater facilities. It talks about where do you get your water, where do you get your transportation, the purpose of the residential general district, and that's the tan colored area on our map, and then we've got the interspersed green open corridors.
Mm-hmm.
But the uses permitted outright, and I'm on page 26 now, under D, We have single-family dwellings, including manufactured home, duplexes, accessory dwellings, multi-use paths, open space, residential facility or residential home, home occupations, and then some characteristics that we have talked about previously. There's nothing inconsistent there.
So there couldn't be anything in there, no home businesses in there.
Just home occupations, which are
does not serve clients or customers on site. So Linda's Hair Nook would not work in there.
No, not if you have people coming in.
Okay.
Now, in the rest of the city, we're more flexible.
Right.
And there's good reason for that.
Right.
Roads and streets. And then they say, here are the things that require site plan review, just like what we talked about. So multifamily dwellings, bed and breakfasts, child care, parks or playgrounds, and then they jump to conditional uses. And we would change the language so that it's subject to our conditional use criteria, not the county's. And it's fairly consistent, but ours is stylized for Lapine.
They have a problem with that?
No.
I mean, or
no.
Well, it's very specific on the location of bed and breakfast, child care facility. Let me read this. Located adjacent to the central mm-hmm. or a neighborhood. Where is the central collector road? We don't have one yet, do we?
Yes,
it's identified. It's the primary road that runs through the middle. If you look at the master plan.
Well, I mean, right now it's just a dirt road, right?
Well, it's on the right-hand side of where the subdivision is platted. It's central through that little tan area.
I was just out there this afternoon.
There you go.
And I was driving up a dirt road.
There may be some dirt roads out there, but this one, I believe, is improved.
I mean, is it on the plat?
It's on wherever it is, but
it's on the
master plat.
It is?
Yeah.
With the easement and the footage and everything?
Part of it is, but the rest of it is designated on the master.
Just designated, okay.
Exactly.
So that's your other neighborhood. So I just want to get this straight. This is quite a bit for this here to go through, but just for an example, I mean, it's pretty limiting on, you guys are very familiar with this. I guess I haven't really read every letter of this. Where else should we be looking at very specific siting? That might be enough area for child care facilities, because as a residential neighborhood, that's solid residential homes in there. Lots of kids. So we have a pretty limited place for child care facilities.
And what they're trying to do is take things that aren't homes and put them closer to roads, so they have a less of an impact on the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so it's on the center collector road, and then it's always also on Huntington or Burgess. So
right.
I suppose that's close enough.
And then don't forget, we have an overlay zone that adds more intensive uses and flexibility for mixed use along Burgess.
Right.
And so that's one thing that the county agreed, they didn't fight that.
Mm-hmm.
They said that's fine. And that's how we got the extra.
Well, this was on the original.
The
they
space.
Haven't seen this, but they have seen the original, right?
This is their code. This is right out of their
code. Oh, right. Yeah, well, this is 18.
And this does not conflict with ours. No, and we're going to build on it.
Yeah.
And expand some uses for the mixed-use crosshatched.
Oh, I'm
right.
Sorry. I thought you said this is what we're going to adopt.
It is. It's a section of the county code that we're going to put into our code.
Okay. I just... Boy.
It's not really something we have
really
a choice
some more
on.
Time on this one,
yeah.
You do have choices. The question is, what are the ramifications of making changes when people have already purchased property out there and...
Yeah.
The transfer development credit system is already in place. And keep in mind, we negotiated with the county to get that extra open space,
right,
to push that, double the size. And one of the things we talked about is taking their code and putting it into our code, and then expanding uses along Burgess where we have the cross-hatched mixed-use area,
mm-hmm,
so that we have a blending.
Yeah, it'd be tough to change it
it is
too drastically, but... we really though need to really look at it, Commission, to make sure this is what Lapine wants.
You should take your time, no matter what.
I mean, you know, obviously...
That's how we came to Lapine in the first place, is because of all this.
Obviously, so, it's what the county wants, they wrote it, but...
Yeah.
We've gone through the elements of their section here, and there isn't anything that's highly unusual. So, you know, I don't see anything that's going to be inconsistent with our comprehensive plan.
And this is expected to be developed out over, what, 20 years or something like that? Is that?
I would suspect a little longer.
Yeah.
There's quite a few acres of them.
I mean, you know, I'd have a real problem if there was a manufacturing site in the middle of all this or something like that, but it's, you know, it's pretty much...
it's a neighborhood.
Yeah.
This, you know, when it talks about in E2, where it talks about the community center, it's referencing one community center which is already built. Is there room for another community center? Because as 1,800 more home sites go in there, that little community center is going to get real small real quick. So
I don't see a limitation.
Yeah, because it just says community center up to mm-hmm. four. So
it's
so
not it's saying only one. It's just saying that you can develop community center, but they're going to be limited in size to 4,000.
You're
going to have 10 of them.
There you go.
Well, that one is in the middle of the one park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about probably having them in.
Yeah, in each park. Yeah.
The reason for the limitation on size typically is so that it is a center for that community, that area, and doesn't all of a sudden become 20,000 square feet, and it's
right.
the wedding venue, the party mm-hmm. venue for everyone in the community mm-hmm. coming into your neighborhood.
Yeah, right. King Chesney concert.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although they do have basketball courts at that one. Yeah, those are the only basketball courts in town. I found that out the other day.
Really?
I didn't.
Wow.
Well, except for the indoor one at the event center, but outside, that's the only basketball courts around. We may change that.
Mm-hmm. And we're missing a chart.
Yeah,
it's essentially 26-27.
Yeah.
I understand.
We have a table 2 there.
What's our lot densities we come up with in the...
I knew you were going to ask that. It's
I know it's 1,800, but I don't know what size it is.
It's a range in... If you give me a second, I'm going to look that up right now. County's code. I don't know why that didn't come.
So this wasn't part of the DLDC had a problem with, right?
Oh, no. Well, actually, that's a good thing to talk about while I'm loading up the computer. Our comprehensive plan and our UGB proposal is at the state overview. And we had a meeting a couple weeks ago with the new state representative and some of the people higher up in DLCD. And they said, no worries, but there's going to be a list of things that we want you to submit or change in your plan. And, of course, that freaked me out.
Mm-hmm.
But having gone through this before in Prineville when we did their plan and their UGB, you get about a sheet of things that they want corrected. That's not unusual. If there are wholesale changes, then I'd be freaking out, but they assure me it's not
that. It's not necessarily things
that
they want corrected. Sometimes they want you to
explain
why
yeah.
you put a policy or provision in there.
But they did ask for a new policy to be added. And
don't they have some concerns about lot sizes?
Well, it's the density. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to fight them a little bit on that.
Yeah. Yeah, because that is something that's really important here.
We're going from 1 to 3 over 20 years. What more do they want?
You need a per acre to 3.
Yeah. I mean, it's just...
What we learned, John and I, over there at that planning meeting, they were talking about the fact that they set these things up for cities. I mean, the rules are for cities. We have to live by the same mm-hmm. the big cities do.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we can push to change it. That's what we have to do. The rules are laid out for the big cities, you know?
Yeah, and see, and that's Deborah and I, we've had a full-on philosophical discussion on this before, and the goal one, I'll give you my take, is public involvement. It's going to have lots of public involvement.
Yeah.
But I think it's eroded to the fact that it's, we have public hearings. The state says you have to have the public involved. But I think sometimes what they fail to take into consideration is if you let them talk, you really need to listen to what
right.
they're saying.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so when we hear that on the density issues, we're going from 1 unit per acre to 3 units per acre. I mean, percentage-wise of density, that's huge for a community over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But they would like to see it at like 5 or 6 because of what, full circle, mm-hmm. what you just said.
Yeah.
Lapine is the same as Beaverton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The good news is the notice period that went out to more than 100 agencies and individuals that participated in the comprehensive plan process, no negative comments, no appeals, and so we're clear of that hurdle, right. which is really, really good. We're not right. hung up there. I got a call from the DLCD rep today who said, some of the things we know you've submitted, would you submit them again so that we have them? So some of the things they're asking for, we've already submitted, we just have to, I don't know what they did with the disc. I don't know. And,
no,
you know, our old rep, Mark Radabaugh, retired.
I would stall.
No. We can't. We got to keep moving forward because of the sewer and water district issue and as well as our jurisdictional
but
issues.
But they can lose information and then call back and you have to provide.
It's just as easy for me to send it off, and that way they have it.
And we haven't, none of this is plotted out. So, we expect that you folks will absolutely try to get us, the lowest density you can. I mean, I understand that we are bound by state laws, but we've got to not just give in. They have some flexibility. We do know that. And so if we can.
So the people have spoken, and I mean, like you said, it's how they pay for it. That's what everybody wants.
There's not,
yeah.
In the state rules, there's nothing that defines what urban density is by number. It doesn't say that it's X. So what we're saying is in our working with the community, going from 1 to 3, I mean, 3 times what you are. As urban densities go, that's not very dense, but in comparison to what you have in Lapine today, that's a great leap forward.
Yeah.
And we actually have to start out the lowest as possible, and then as we grow, we can divide ourselves. We don't need the state telling us right out of the bat that we expect you guys to do your best. Just.
Okay, now let's review just briefly where we were putting that density, because sometimes density scares people. And one of the things that I want to make sure we all remember is that we looked for a way to blend uses, not to mandate that neighborhoods that were already of a certain pattern had to have, things that were not compatible next to them.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at mixed use as our tool for putting density where it made sense. So in the crosshatched areas and in the flexibility provided up in Wickiup and looking at other areas that already have a mix of uses, building on that pattern. And that's where you'll see most of the density occur. In the new neighborhood, the county's neighborhood, you'll see it there, and then in the crosshatched areas. So if somebody asks you, where's all this density going? If we're tripling, where's it going to go? It's going to be in the transition areas primarily.
Mm-hmm. And it ends up being some of those areas may have 6 or 7 units to the acre.
Sure.
But that's
sure.
so that you can look at the existing neighborhoods and you maintain the character of those neighborhoods by not saying you will chop each one of these lots into 3 or 4 lots.
Right.
So that's preservation of the character versus in untapped areas, that's probably okay to get more density.
That's a very logical explanation.
Okay, hang on. I just want to make sure you know what this table says, because it's critical. It's just popping up now. Okay. Come on, baby.
Filler.
Hmm?
just think of you're talking mixed use, you know, and the density in relation to potentially some commercial along the corridors like Burgess Road, right there, you know, those all, I always think of it in terms of how does it meet your other goals and policies and your comp plan, or you're putting the people where close to where the density of the people, close to where the services are provided.
Exactly.
Close to where transit corridors or stops would be. You have a park and ride right there. You know, that, so you're going to, and the density blends out over your community to be 3 units per acre, but not everywhere. Some is higher.
I was, evidently there's a lot of, around that Family Butte Park area, there's a lot of small kids and families over in there. There's a lot of, not apartments, but mobile parks and different things. I didn't realize so much of it was over there.
Oh, up in the F1 zone?
The off of Family Butte Road. Yeah, it's a community, Lapine Community Park. Yeah. It's residential, but it's not single. Most of it's, or a lot of it's not.
Okay, under Table 1 for the Lapine Neighborhood Planning Area Density Standards, Neighborhood 1 is 12 units per acre maximum. The minimum is 8 units per acre. And the lot sizes are from 2,400, ranging up to 15,000 square feet for the different neighborhoods. So they have a range of densities that go from 2 units per acre up to 12 units per acre.
That's on E in this section, right?
That's the table we're going to come over.
Yeah. No, as
it's on what page?
As a section 7.
Yes.
The density range pertains to this section E on page 27. Okay.
But you said 12 units per acre with a maximum 8 per acre minimum?
Yes, you can go into 12.
Where did come from? You said 2 what?
Different neighborhoods have different density ranges.
Oh, okay.
So the whole complex is made up of different neighborhoods that have different characteristics. Neighborhood 1 is the densest, and then neighborhood 2, 3, and 4 look like they have a range of densities.
And the code matches up with this.
Yes.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah.
But you said that the minimum on those ones was 2 per acre?
Is that the range of minimum density starts at 2 and goes up to 8. So no matter what, you cannot have anything less than 2 units per acre for the minimum density.
That's quadrant 2.
Yeah.
You in unit 3 and 4.
And then I'm looking for anything else that would be unusual for us.
Well, that phase two there that already has the Crescent Creek, does anybody recall what that ended up? Obviously, we're not going to change that. It's already built. So what did that end up in that Crescent Creek? I mean, it looks like... Yeah, what's the density on that?
Well, it is variable. We'd have to look at the approval to see.
See, that's where Don Griner would come in.
Well, and that's, what we have heard is that people, some love it being as high density as it is that currently live in there.
Mm-hmm.
And others say they have to make sure the blind is pulled before they put their bathrobe on because they're literally 10 feet away from everybody. So you know...
It's a choice of how.
If it was me, when I saw that go in, being from living in Lapine a long time, you know, that was certainly as dense as I would ever like to see Lapine. That's why that question was: is how dense is that? Because how am I go up from here?
No, I don't know exactly.
Yeah. See, but
when you say 12 per acre, I'm thinking that's pretty high. That's 3,000. That's 4,000 feet, isn't it?
Well, that's
no,
multi-family.
That's 3,500.
You are
3,500 square foot per acre.
Yeah, but you also have streets, and you typically 20% of an acre is, so you have 30,000 divided by 12, so you're 2,000 to 2,500 square feet per. See, but not all of that is in single-family lots. Some of that is, that density is in multifamily structures.
Duplexes.
So duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes could occur. It's like when you look at this neighborhood right now, you see, even though it's a small scale map, you see smaller lots and larger lots.
Right.
And again, I mean, what you really try and taking it to the comprehensive plan level, those densities, again, you're blending the density throughout your community. So you can maintain some of these large lot subdivisions or create some large lot subdivisions. Balanced by some higher density multifamily structures, and those in what the state is really saying, provide choices in housing, and those choices in housing relate right back to a person's ability to afford various housing types.
No, I agree. Yeah, I do agree with all that. So obviously, we're going to try to keep the higher densities at phase one, and then we're going to go up. What was, did you have, I'm sorry, three and four?
Yeah, one thing you want to be aware of is that their minimum lot size is 2,400 square feet, and ours, in the code, we recommend 3,000. So we're not that much different.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is that one of the things you're having a problem with?
No, I don't think so, because when you think of townhomes that are connected together, that's pretty the minimum. You don't want to get below 2,000 square feet. So 2,400, you're getting close to you know, what we're recommending as well in the code.
Let me just get this straight. These numbers that you're saying we recommended, these are the same numbers that DLDC is having a problem with? As being too low of density?
They would like more density in the city, but we don't know exactly what.
Not in a specific area, but overall, as it balances out for your entirety of your residential areas.
And keep in mind, we have not received the formal letter yet either. So we're just hearing from our rep that these issues are coming up.
Well, they also like everything to be same configuration on lots too, don't they? They don't like odd-shaped lots.
No, I think they would give us a range of choices. We're going to have to provide probably more narrative on why our situation is just pine for lapine. And that kind of description, I think we had a good description in the comp plan.
Yeah,
if we
too.
Need more, we'll have more.
Okay. You know, you guys are awesome. You know exactly what the plan wants. I think for now we can trust that you will.
Well, and we can point to the county stuff and say, look, you have right at the center an opportunity to go up to 12 units per acre. It doesn't work for all areas of Lapine. Mm-hmm. We can easily point to this and say, hey, mm-hmm. we have those choices.
You know, some of this too is every decision that you make at the city on, I'll point this out, as on some of these discretionary criteria we went over earlier, site plan review, is going to be held against you for the next person that comes in for an application under those discretionary criteria, and they say, well, you did it for this development, why can't I get those same things? And there may be different circumstances and different reasons to treat people differently or developments differently because there's different circumstances. The LCD is also, based on your comment, is looking at all the communities in Oregon and where they have pushed for that density. The question will be, which is what Deborah's saying, they may want justification this deep so they can come back and say, here's why we treated Lapine differently than we treated Tualatin.
Could we leave in our language, and this is, doesn't have any of the DLDC, but when we begin within our residential zone, could we allow some subdividing to happen? When we talk about development, we always talk about new development. We never give existing folks the opportunity to make it a go at this. What I'm getting at is I would like to see an opportunity for self-development along Burgess on acre lots that goes in 500 feet. I would like to see some subdevelopment down along Finley Butte that has acre lots. I would like to see those folks be able to split their properties up, put fourplexes, eightplexes in, closer to these core commercial areas. I'd like to see things like that. Give the folks, existing folks right now in La Pine, the opportunity to subdivide and not just talk about new developments all the time.
Sure.
This is what I would like to see.
Okay.
Because the reason is it makes sense in the state's plans, it makes sense in our development plan, it makes sense all the way around to take and allow subdevelopment near the core areas, allow for that walking and the bicycling and all being close to the services that we already have existing. So, you know, that's the type of thing I'd like to see.
That, in most cases, fall under a partition code that's already existing, allowed?
Sometimes.
I'm just wondering, because otherwise, a subdivision, usually what you're looking at is someone who owns multiple lots that are all in one area. Well, that would have to, if you're doing more than...
But think of a person who has one lot and wants to do cluster housing where the lots aren't really sold. You're just buying the property on
exactly
which the
right
home is built.
Right.
So
what I'm actually talking about is almost encouraging that to happen.
Yeah. Right. I've got to talk to you about one thing that is consistent with what you just talked about. The city manager's asked me to write a letter of how we would proceed to start our TSP, the Transportation System Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Money was budgeted for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's essential that we get going on that.
Yes, we do.
And I've talked to several traffic engineers to get some concept of cost, and we're in the range.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we would probably ask them to do is to take a look at places like Cagle Subdivision,
mm-hmm,
which doesn't have a lot of streets, and think about how redevelopment could occur there,
mm-hmm,
as well as in the core where new streets might be needed to facilitate new lots.
Yep.
And that should be part of the TSP, because you want to have a grid system that works as you grow.
Mm-hmm.
And to do the things you're talking about, all of you are talking about, to give those choices to people.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it unless you have a street system that connects.
Exactly.
And that's what the TSP will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is lay out a path.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And there are some provisions, I was just going through this as you were discussing that, for accessory dwellings, things like that, in the mm-hmm neighborhood. And I always play devil's advocate with you guys.
Thank you, Ken.
We've seen some of this, as sewer system was expanded in Bend to those half-acre lots that were half-acre because they needed a septic system,
right,
all of a sudden they had the ability to be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
There was... You ended up with an issue of, I've owned this property for 20 years, I want to partition it, sell off some lots, I can make some money from my property, or I want an accessory dwelling, I want some things, I can do something with my property. Next door to the neighbor who was there that said, I've lived on my property for 20 years, I like my neighborhood the way that it
sure
is, and
sure
I don't want anyone to come in and mm-hmm create this density in my neighborhood.
Sure, sure.
So I'm saying that, and it's
how
to provide the balance. it's a difficult thing.
You allow the...
Because neither both are right.
Yeah, you allow the citizens to make that decision. But you leave the language to allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't... I think we're being too... I think we're...
Yeah, we're doing that, John.
The language allows that.
Because we absolutely, you know, especially up in the Cagle area, along these large collector roads, when I look at the you know, where are we going to put multi-family dwelling and such,
mm-hmm,
it makes sense to put those fourplexes and such near these major collector roads. And there's a tremendous opportunity down near town here to do a few more of those. And then up along Burgess,
we have
along Huntington a little bit, you know, and then this crosshatch areas, we have a huge area there. But we don't want to have, you know, 10 acres, we just sold eightplexes in it. You know, you want to spread it out so that they look like...
They have to be planned, master plan. But before we lose track of time, I want to bring to your attention a letter that was submitted from Crestview Cable. They want to make sure that they convey their thoughts that they have a historical, current, and future use of their property on 3rd Street. They have significant investments there. And they want to make sure that the zoning ordinance doesn't take away those investments. And I said I would discuss this with you. I assured Mr. Harris that I didn't think it was a problem to make sure that Crestview Cable's investments were consistent with the zone. So if I needed to change something for that particular use, I don't think it's unusual because it's a utility system and we allowed utility systems throughout the code.
Well, and it's on commercial zone right now. So why would there be a problem?
He just wants to make sure. So I said I would bring it. It's a public letter, so I need to bring it to your attention.
Oh, okay.
Although it does appear to be in a FEMA floodplain.
Well, he'd have to deal with those permits.
Yeah, that's
no matter what. We couldn't take that away.
No.
Unless we renew some.
I've never had a problem with grandfathering in uses.
Virginia had a question earlier about housing that I dodged, so I want to make sure that we talk about that.
Yep.
Okay. Two. I noticed that we hadn't really finalized anything on RV parks, because I noticed on this one page, because I was looking where we were talking about...
What page are we on?
Yeah. Okay, we're getting to page...
We had a section just earlier.
It's page 44, and at the bottom of this one area it says, note, PC would like to explore summer home and RV standards and snow storage, but that was, I think that had to do with the housing, but it says mobile home parks, and then it says campgrounds. Are those considered campgrounds? Because I don't see that we're addressing, I'm looking at the fact that existing RV parks do not have the setbacks for the sides that we're currently stating that we would be requesting in the future, which is here or there, but we might want to consider it because one of the new RV parks that was built, you go in there, it looks like they have a fence and then they don't, I don't think they have 10 feet up there.
So you want a section on RV parks?
I think based on the area we live in, I think we need to address specifically RV parks.
I think that's smart.
That was and where they're allowed, obviously, because I mean there are RV parks in residential areas. There are RV parks in fields.
You could have them almost in any zone.
So it would be conditional use.
Zone.
We would state add that as conditional use.
And I
think
we should.
I didn't know. I just wanted to be sure.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah, a huge RV park up off of Day Road.
Yeah, but that's not in the city.
It's
we
have RV parks everywhere.
That's what I'm saying.
Our nature is
in the single family and multifamily zones, we have campgrounds and recreational vehicle parks. Listed.
Were those outright or conditional?
Conditional uses.
Okay,
so it's in there. I just want to be sure.
In residential zones, conditional use, right?
Yep.
But I'm just thinking also the setbacks if we need to specifically address that, or it would be just a conditional use. They put forth a plan and we say,
would it be fair to say that the setback should be the same as any other structure?
For an RV?
Yeah.
Well,
you know, the structure is 20 feet or whatever it is. Wouldn't it be safe to say that? Why should a trailer move up closer to the garage?
Except for camping, we have 75 feet. Did we change that? I thought
I think
it still says 75.
Yeah,
we changed it to 50. But it still says 75 in here.
Okay,
I just wanted to see.
You have this ability. Because to develop a campground or an RV park is a conditional use, you could establish the setback less, as John stated. But because through the conditional use permit process, where if you remember all those criteria we went through, you could find reason to make that setback bigger or require things to mitigate any impact that you mm-hmm. think might come from the campground on the adjoining property.
On a case-by-case basis?
On a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, basically it's a common sense thing because, you know, you could run into a problem mm-hmm. that way.
Again, hard to enforce because you can pull a trailer right up there within 10 feet and spend the night and that'll be another problem.
Okay, so the other item that I brought up was that we had not specifically addressed things like shelters that are allowed.
We have...
And the main reason I brought it up was because in the city of Madras, they were having a big discussion as to the fact that they had not included that in their zoning. And then all of a sudden they have a request to have... you know, a facility that offers beds to 20 people or...
Okay. We have family daycare home, group daycare home in the commercial zone. But you want to make it more more identified, so to speak.
Well, would it be a conditional use permit? Conditional, it would be a conditional use, but we got where?
See, that's the thing I have a problem with. If somebody wanted to do something like that, I think they would come to the city, and I think that would be decided where. I think, if anything, we should just say where not, where they couldn't be, you know. Because usually when those things come about, there's a lot of people that are involved in it.
Right, and we have currently the community kitchen. And at some point, they may say, you know, there's a real need here. We want to expand to...
At this particular point, they did let some people stay overnight, and they were out of compliance, and they could not do that. They cannot do that anymore.
Or
so,
churches,
you know,
that want to be able to open their doors for a certain period of time. I mean, there's the technicality of emergency shelters during, you know, horrific weather all the time.
Right.
So what can you say? So, I mean, I think it's just something we need to think about and see what other standards are for other places.
Okay.
The residential homes, it's been years back, but I dealt with this specific thing and we did changes to the code. Residential homes, just under state definition, is where you have five or fewer people that are receiving some type of treatment, or it's a halfway house, or they're...
Or an elder care facility.
Exactly. And if it's five or fewer people, they can be essentially anywhere that allows a single family residence to be built. It's considered, it's the same as if it's me and I had four roommates and we're all living in that house. They don't discriminate. When you get above that, see, then you get into like a residential care facility, and that is something that's typically regulated because you get beyond an impact that's beyond what might be typically expected in a single family residence with five or fewer people. Then you also, that's one type of use. You have a shelter, a homeless shelter. I think what you do is you figure out what of those types of uses that you think you want to plan for. You define them. This is where the definition section becomes very important. What is a residential care facility? What is a homeless shelter? You define that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, once you come up with those definitions, it's kind of giving you a way to work through it, is then you figure out where they should be allowed. In a residential care facility, you might allow it in a commercial zone and, say, a residential zone or a mixed-use zone. But a homeless shelter, you might just limit to a commercial zone, for example.
Right.
So it's coming up with, what's the problem we're trying to take care of? How do we define it? And then where do we want to locate it?
That's why we have you.
And so,
as such, in our commercial zones, I agree that we need to, it'd be best to have the language in there. It's happening right now already. Let's go ahead and put some language in there.
Okay.
Commercial zone. Only, what does the commission think?
Mixed use may be a good place
mixed
too.
Use,
that's what
commercial.
I'm thinking of.
Commercial and mixed use, conditional uses.
And then it would be conditional.
You know, I don't know if the time frames on it, course, there's emergency uses that are just going to need to happen anyway, but...
But we can give you exceptions powers for that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing we talked about on the drive-in, is that along with conditional uses and variances and similar uses, you may need to have some exceptions powers as well.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think that would be good, too.
Yeah.
Because I think each one of those things does have to be looked at it on a,
they do.
You know, personal one-on-one basis. So
the traffic and
all kinds of things. Yeah.
Okay, so that's it.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Should we take our break?
Let's take a break.
Okay, as far as the other things, we're not going to be able to get to those.
Well, we do have other matters. How about the December 8th meeting? Can we do that real quick?
Yeah, we're going to have to probably move that, depending on tonight's comments from the public. Let's see. We do have a meeting on the 15th, but we're pushing it there. I'd like, could we table that discussion until we see how much public comment we get tonight?
Oh, okay.
And then we'll know, you know, we have a rough idea of the work we have to do.
Yeah,
it'd be good to see what comes from the public.
Okay, we'll table our future meeting date.
And I can.
And I would ask at this time that if any staff or any commissioners have any reports, do so at this time. The core region. None?
Well, we should report on our meeting that week. But you know what? I think I'll type up a report and submit it for next time. That way, you guys will have the information. If that's okay.
This is from your APA conference?
Mm-hmm. That would be good, because that way it would be more thorough.
Right, and then they could have that to refer back to.
That's
so
awesome.
It was very valuable. We learned a lot there.
Well, we can give them some, we got two pamphlets, we can give them one.
That's true.
That's awesome,
But it was well worth it.
Okay.
And like I said, we learned how planning began.
Now we
evolved.
Okay, so I'll entertain a motion at this time to adjourn this regular scheduled meeting.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Motion made and seconded on the question. None. Adjourned at 5:46.
Right.
Is that good? Probably at 6 o'clock.